F4.
Number 14A.
Well, we started this morning with Christ, first from the standpoint of the Word, and then from the standpoint of the Christ, and we left it in the middle of the standpoint of Christ as Christianity. Again, what was the standpoint of the Christ as the Word? It was showing that we have to go on from the Word to the Christ, or else we will decrease. So he showed how to get on from the Word to the Christ. Then we had the Christ as Christ, and so the translation really of the Christ to the human, as it comes to the human, and we saw it in the office of healing and saving. Then we took the Christ in Christianity, and we started out there. The Christ in Christianity then shows that when the Christ in its saving mission has fulfilled its purpose, then everything is brought back to normal, and then God and his creation coincide. Then there is a spiritual agreement between God and man. So the definition of Christ, which we have also in the textbook, that Christ symbolizes really the spiritual agreement between God and man. And this is what John shows from four sides, the spiritual agreement, the spiritual coincidence. He showed it first from the point of view of the Word and said, what the Father worketh, the Son worketh too. So that there is a complete spiritual agreement between the working of the Father and the working of the Son. That the Son can do nothing out of himself, but that he doeth what the Father doeth. So that the works are equal, are in agreement. Then we have seen a touch of the Christ as God is constantly revealing himself, always in a higher and higher and higher way, all through history, all through history of mankind. He will show that man can take part in that greater revelation. So that he says the Father shows the Son even greater works, that God, through the Christ, can always reveal himself in a new way, in a progressive way, so that we take part in the advancement of the God Genesis. This was where we left it, and now we come to the little tone of Christianity. And Christianity again shows that coincidence, namely from the standpoint of the of Christianity, namely by honoring the Son. Well, who is honoring the Son? We are honoring the Son. Can you see? It's at the focal point of Christianity at the moment. We are involved in it. When we honor the Son, we honor also the Father. So that there is a spiritual agreement between honoring the Son means also honoring the Father. This is very important to see. It's a practical situation. And we'll see it. He just uses a few verses for that. He says, for the Father judges no man, but has committed all judgment unto the Son. So that's the introduction to the subject, first to show that the Father, first of all, says, I judge no man. The Father can never judge men, because the Father always only knows himself. He only can know what he himself is. The Father is conscious of himself, therefore only of that which is right, that which is of the nature of perfect idea, and so the Father cannot judge men. But he has given that judgment unto the Son. Yes, the Son can judge it, because the moment we are not in agreement, in spiritual agreement with God, therefore have not that Immanuel sense, the moment we are not in coincidence with God, we judge ourselves. So it's actually at the point of the Christ that we begin to judge ourselves. The moment we are not in line with God, well, naturally then we can't expect that we have the effects of God's creation. And so we judge actually ourselves. So not seeing the sun rightly means not being in spiritual agreement with God. We judge ourselves. So we don't need to judge people. We just can let them be judging themselves. And that again is something that should be quite a rule for us, that we stop judging people, judging a situation. It's not always easy. We have a few thousand years of tradition in our bones that says, yes, you judge, thou shalt and thou shalt not. You must not, and you should do this, and you should do that, and we constantly judge a situation. And here we learn that we shouldn't do that, that somebody judges himself the moment he is not in agreement with the Son, which means that he is not in agreement with the Father. So he judges and punishes himself. We can let the situation destroy itself. We can everything that is wrong destroy itself. We don't have to judge. And it's better that we don't judge, because most of the times we are not God Almighty and know what is right and what is wrong. We always put ourselves right on the throne of God and look out and begin to judge what people have done right and what they have done wrong and what should have been done and what should not have been done, as if we would give God himself. And we are not. So we should just leave that judgment really to the Son. We should leave it to the people themselves who are not in agreement with the Son and therefore not in agreement with the Father. And it not being in agreement judges itself. It punishes itself. So that all men, can you see, all men, you are at the focal point of Christianity. So that all men should honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. That's a very big statement. We should honor the Son in the measure that we honor the Father. If we don't honor really the Son, we don't honor the Father. So he that honoreth not the Son, honoreth not the Father, which has sent him. Well, Mrs. Eddy would perhaps put that into other words. She would say, the revelation and the revelator coincide. That is the same thing. Yet you can't have a revelator that has not a revelation. So that the Son is coinciding really with us, so that if we do not honor Jesus, we do not honor God. If we do not honor Mrs. Eddy, we do not honor God. Because Mrs. Eddy was not a human being, or let's say if we do not honor science and health, which was God's words dictated by God, we do not honor God. If we throw away science and health and throw it on the trash pile, or if we burn it, we are not honoring God. So this is the same as she also says in the Apocalypse, that not understanding really the character of Paul means not to understand the principle which Paul was teaching. And so always we should see there is a coincidence between the revelator and the revelation. Actually, I should put it the other way around. There is always a coincidence between the revelation and the revelator, because the revelation cannot use a revelator that is not transparent. It's impossible. The revelation doesn't come to somebody who is not ready for the revelation, who is not transparent for the revelation. It's impossible. It's impossible that a window pane that is dirty can let the light shine through. It's impossible. So the window pane must be clear in order that the light can shine through. Only then comes the revelation right through in its purity. So let's think about that revelation and the revelator are one. So not understanding Mrs. Eddy or the textbook means not understanding God. We make a distinction between God and His revelation. And so the revelator, which then is being used, cannot be understood either. Can you see the coincidence here? Honoring the Son, the revelator, is honoring the Father, namely the revelation itself. There is no discrepancy between the revelator and the revelation. Then John goes even a step further to the point of science, to being, and shows the coincidence of being, the coincidence of life of God and the life of man. The epitome here is the Father, which is the Word, and the Son, which is the Christ, have in themselves the same life. They have one and the same life. So there is a coincidence between a life that is God and the life that is the Christ. They have the same life. They are not two different realities of life. The life of God is not another reality than the life of Christ. It's just one life with those two offices being either the Word or the Christ. Later on, naturally, we'll go on to Christianity. But here we are still at the focal point of the Christ. The second part is all about the Christ. It's all about how the Christ operates, so that we know how He operates. The biblical text says here, "He that heareth My word and believeth on Him that sent Me," therefore that believes in the Father, "he has everlasting life." So believing really and believing in the Father means that we have everlasting life, because Father is life. So it coincides. And He is passed from death to life. This is a wonderful point that we see. We overcome the belief in death by seeing that there is no discrepancy between life as Father and the life as the Son. That's so that when we accept the Son, we have the same life as the life of the Father. And it's also interesting in this little passage here that He speaks a lot about hearing. See, he that heareth My word. In this passage He doesn't say he that understandeth My word. And I like that very much, because we can see that understanding has a lot to do with that preparatory consciousness which is willing to listen. So that listening to God is a great asset to understand God. And quite often we are not still enough within ourselves to hear God speak. There is too much going on within our mentality. We are troubled, we are upset about things, we are worried about situations and so on. And then we think that we can hear God speak. We can't. We just must first find the stillness within ourselves, so that that there are no waves on the lake. And only when the water is very, very still, we can see the reflection in it. And so it is within us, if everything becomes still within us, when we first really do away with all the arguments within us and everything becomes still within us, we can hear God speak. So he that heareth, he that receiveth really My word and then believeth on Him that sent Me has everlasting life, and he is passed from death to life. The hour cometh, and it now is, when the dead shall hear, again it is hearing, shall hear the voice of the Son of God. So we can see again, to be acquainted with the Son of God, to be acquainted with the Christ, is not just a mental activity, just not only a thinking activity, where we just sit down and say, I have a few minutes and I'm going to read something in the textbook, I'm going to sit down and think a little bit about God and His Christ. That isn't it. It is really when we are still enough and when the dead shall hear, when everything is dead within us that seems to talk and talk nonsense, then the mortal mind is dead, and then we can hear the voice of the Son of God. Then we can hear what God has in store of us. And they that hear, again, hear, see, this time it's not, and they that believe, they that hear shall live. For as the Father has life in himself, now shows the life of the Word, the Father, so has he given to the Son, to the Christ, to have life in himself. Can you see the coincidence again of life? That the life of the Word and the life of the Christ is the one and the same life. So we have the oneness of life, the spiritual agreement of life. The life of God and the life of man is actually the same life. There are not two different realities of life. It's just one life. So again, we have a sense that we must be clear that it is not enough to resolve within ourselves the usual dualistic sense of opposites, of the opposites which we call dualism of matter and spirit, of life and death, of mortal mind and divine mind, of soul and spirit, and the material sense and these things. All these opposites are truly dualistic. But we also have another kind of dualism within us usually, namely that we have a God, and next to God we have a creation, man, we, and have a separation in between, have a distance in between, and that gives a dual sense of reality. We acknowledge, yes, God is real, yes, we acknowledge that man as idea is real, but we see them as two, instead of as one. Principle and idea is one. It isn't said that principle and idea are one. Yes. So in these few sentences and verses, John was able really to convey to us the terrific sense of that coincidence of God and man. So that Christ in Christianity shows that God and his creation coincide, that the principle and its circumference, the center and its circumference are one. It gives that sense of the spiritual agreement. Do you see how all those four subtones have one common denominator? Coincidence. You see, that's what we have to read in the Bible. When you were reading John, as I hoped you would do it, as a preparation, you read all these things, but because you read the bananas and the fishes, you couldn't see that he has categories, that he was thinking in categories. He was thinking the category of coincidence of God and man. But if one has within oneself a structure consciousness, then actually we hear not the text, but we hear the categories and the system, then we hear these breaks as they are shown, that suddenly, after having shown that the Christ as the Christ always brings translation and translation to the human situation, that then he breaks up, he finishes with that category and goes over to quite a different category and says, now I'm going to explain to you the Christ in Christianity, namely that the Christ is that bridge which builds a unity between God and man, so that there is just one thing going on, and not two good things going on, but one. And so he shows first that attitude that there is just the unity and the oneness, the coincidence of works. The Father works, the Son works too. The Son does not work out of himself, but what the Father works, the Son works too. Then in the little subtone of the Christ, he says, and if the revelation of God goes on, it also goes on and on in you. so that you will see greater works, that you will take part in the God Genesis, so that when after Jesus, 2,000 years later, Mary Baker Eddy comes and gives you science and health, you can take part in that greater work. So that there is coincidence between not only work and work, but also between the progressive revelation of God Himself and the understanding of that revelation, so that we have the greater insight, the greater revelation, the greater works. Then third, he was showing that coincidence by showing really that there is a coincidence between the revelator and its revelation. That there are not two things really, that by honoring really the Son, we honor the Father, and by honoring the Father, we honor the Son, because the Father is always the Son. And so there is a coincidence that God never uses somebody or someone that is not adapted to that revelation. He never chooses something that is not transparent for that revelation. There are enough walking round about that are not transparent. So the light doesn't shine through, so it could shine through if there would be enough transparency for it. Now we are always transparent for it if we culture ourselves in the system, in the categories, in divine science. When we know that our origin is divine science, that we are nothing else but the idea of divine science, that we are nothing else but an idea of the whole structure of being, then the structure of being, capital B, can shine through us and finds a response in us and a reflection within us, a sounding board within us, and can show forth that structure of being in our understanding. So that the revelator and the revelation is one and the same. They coincide. And finally, he shows the coincidence of being, the coincidence of life, that the life of God and the life of man is the same life. Yes. Isn't that clear? Isn't it crisp, clear, so to say? It's just a matter of being able to listen to the categories. It comes to a further point, namely to Christ as science. And science is giving a proof. So the Christ science says, well, the Christ works and proves itself. He gives a proof. In the words of John, he didn't use the proof. That word doesn't appear in the whole of the Bible. Apparently it wasn't a word that was known at that time. So proof at that time was called witness. A witness is the proof. He proves something. So he talks about the witness. But first of all, he introduces really the four subtones here by making clear what the proof is. Because we can't just say, well, we have a proof, and then it isn't a right proof. Because all religions, all metaphysical proofs, everybody has proofs for their theory. Everyone. You can go to the spiritualist or to the animal magnetism, or you can go to the new age group, or you can go to the psychologist or to the medical man. They all have proofs. So that's nothing important. The question is the proof a divine proof? That's for us the question. Everything can prove their theories. So he therefore has to state first what is a right proof. What is the nature of a right proof? He says first in 30, I can of mine own self do nothing. So he said, I of my own self cannot prove anything. That's not right. Whereas all others say, I put up a theory and then I'm going to prove it. And usually they can do it. That's not something big. As I hear, I judge. My judgment is judge. So, as I hear, he says, therefore, as I get the message from God, as I listen to God, then I can judge if my judgment is true. So he only accepts, so to say, the proof that God gives to us. the witness that God witnesses. Because I speak not of mine own will, but the will of the Father which has sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. You see, quite something big that we have to remember today. We have hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of mental healing, unorthodox healing methods, hundreds of them, and they all have their proofs, or they wouldn't go along with it. They would drop it. So they all establish their own theory, and then they are going to prove it. So John knew about this and said, but I must show that the only proof that we should accept is the proof that God gives us, and no other proof. All other proofs are just temporary proofs, are just proofs for mortal mind, for the human mind. They are just proofs for the five physical senses. They believe it. To them you can prove all sorts of things. But that is not what I want to show as a proof of my own work. Yes. So, having stated first what is proof, he begins to show that proof in four different ways.